Now, earlier this morning, I caught up with Jim McNeil, who is a polar explorer and founder of theicewarrior.com. I began by asking Jim what made him become an explorer, or what influenced him.
I suppose I was inspired by all the early explorers and the stories of explorers, not just the ones that we hear about these days, but the hundreds that don't get any airspace these days. But I was inspired by them because they did extremely difficult things and came back with extremely worthwhile, purposeful knowledge. And what I wanted to do in 2001 was create a project that sort of emulated that, sort of copied it. And in those days, of course, they didn't have any experts, so a lot of the people that engaged in this were ordinary people from ordinary backgrounds. They might have been farmers, they might have been coal workers, they might have been captains of industry, but they were from all backgrounds and all walks of life, and they went on these extraordinary expeditions, not knowing really what they're facing. Now, we obviously can't do that because there's lots of knowledge out there these days, but we take people from all walks of life, all echelons of society, and create modern-day explorers out of them. We give them the skill set, the medical knowledge, the critical crisis management, the team work, and everything else that makes them a really good expedition member. And then we create these flagship expeditions, which still push the boundaries. There are, and this is a big message I'd like to get across, still loads of stuff to be explored and discovered out there, and a lot of that's to do with change these days. But we do these flagship expeditions, and they go and do something extraordinary. So it's ordinary people from all walks of life doing something extraordinary.
I would take as well, Jim, that climate change is playing a very significant part in any expedition that you undertake, especially within the last decade, if not the last 20 years. How have you actually seen climate change base itself upon any expedition that you undertake?
Well, that's a very interesting question and quite astute, actually, because in the old days, as it were, when I first started in the early 80s, you could predict what sort of weather you were going to experience, what sort of temperatures up in the polar regions, for example, that you were going to get, and even wind directions and weather patterns were predictable. But these days they're not, and I was working on a big BBC production called Frozen Planet a couple of years ago, and although we were working in the Arctic summer, we actually experienced three sandstorms, which took it way beyond the heat that we should have expected, and two snowstorms, taking it down to minus 21. So we went from plus 30 to minus 21 in the same 12-week period. So these days, it means that we have to prepare more. We have to be prepared for extremes that we...
I guess now with cheaper airfares, people are availing and travelling to the other side of the world and exploring more. And there is that kind of myth, I think, running out there that there really is nothing left to explore.
Well, absolutely. And it's not true either. people think because we fly all over the globe, we look at it from space, we know where we are, in inches from space gadgets and things like that, that we have travelled the globe and we do know everything about it. But it's actually not true. There are vast areas of the surface that we don't know about, vast numbers of species that we can we don't know about and that we're discovering. And to give you an example, a handful of scientists that work on this discover 15,000 species a year. If more scientists work on it, if more people went out there exploring it, we'd find one hell of a lot more. So, there are areas on the surface that we don't know about, but of course that's only the surface. I mean, the discoveries to be made in the oceans, underneath the surface of the oceans, are enormous. And also, the cave systems really represent one of the biggest unknown and unexplored areas that the globe has left to look at. So there's an awful lot out there in terms of summited mountains. There are thousands that haven't been summited because they're just so remote. So it's quite an exciting time, but it's very easy to sit back and think we've done it all.
Now, with the explorations that you undertake, Jim, I guess there's a lot of training, you know, there's a lot of logistical planning as well involved.
Well, yeah, it is about, first and foremost, training the people that are involved. And, you know, they're going into an extremely hostile environment more often than not. And that can be heat, that can be bugs and spiders and, you know, snakes and what have you, or it can be the extreme cold. I think in terms of environments, the extreme cold is the most life-threatening because you only have to immerse yourself in it for a number of minutes to realise how threatened you are. And if you don't have the right equipment, if you don't have the right clothing, if you don't know how to use that clothing and equipment properly, then you can really very quickly feel very vulnerable. But, yeah, I mean, the preparation has to be absolutely thorough, and it takes a lot of time. People, again, I think because of programs and knowledge and stuff like that, think that they can just go out there and do it. It's not wise to do that. I would say push your boundaries, but make sure you know where your boundaries are before you push them, and push them, but don't leap over them. So it's a matter of getting out there, getting experience in dealing with Mother Nature, because she is all-powerful. There's no doubt about it. And the more you sort of expose yourself to Mother Nature, the more respect you get for her. If she wants to wipe you out, she will. I've nearly perished twice now, and it's only because of luck and previous experience that I managed not to. So preparation has to be thorough. Equipment has to be second to none. Clothing has to be second to none as well.
And I guess through your expeditions as well, Jim, you would probably see firsthand the effects of climate change and the change that it has on our planet.
I think the change in the polar regions, you know, they for 50 or 60 years have been known to be the early warning system of change for the rest of the globe. And that the changes over the last 10, maybe 15 years have been extreme. I mean, you see rivers changing their course. You see permafrost melting. You see different species that are arriving. You see melt water. You far more melt days than freeze days. Far less ice where there should be ice. And huge, huge disruption to the weather patterns, which even we can witness and see in our own seasonal changes that are going on in our own back garden, you know. So it's that sort of thing that's really surprising.
I guess it's very important as well, Jim, to educate our children. And sometimes our children actually need to educate us on the effects of climate change, for it's their planet they're going to inherit. And I guess that's a very important role to yourself.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, I think so. Because, as I say, they can see it in their own environment if they open their eyes over a few years that they might have had on this earth. You know, the birds come out at a different time of year, or come back from Africa or wherever they've migrated to at a different time of year. The flowers are flowering at different times of year, and all sorts of things. And if you transpose that to the extreme environment, it makes it you know, really exciting when you talk about polar bears and, you know, what's going to happen to the polar bear. And you know, he's head of the food chain. You know, what's going to happen to the rest of the food chain if that polar bear gets into trouble or whatever. You know, it can make it really, really exciting. And, you know, I love going into school, you know, showing my photographs, talking about the little anecdotes that I've got about meeting foxes and all sorts of things like that, little Disney moments, I call them, because they come back with all the fresh questions. You know, there is no question that a child won't ask. Which is fantastic, and they really put you under pressure, which I love.
And what would your words of advice be to Jim if there's anybody listening who actually feels that they want to undertake an exploration, no matter how big or how small? What would be the best way for them to, I guess, challenge themselves and to get involved?
Well, I think it's if you've got a desire to do something like that, and, you know, it's my belief that most people have... The vast majority of people have huge amounts of potential underneath their bonnet that they'll never realise. And it's really cathartic, it's empowering, it's wonderful to change and develop yourself. And for me to watch this process, I mean, I facilitate the process, but I really only watch it. And that change is fantastic. But they can, you know, go out there, discover which really interests you, which sort of environment, and I suppose you've got to plant yourself in the environment to see which you get on with best. And you know, get trained well, get the technical skills. You know, you can train a person, technically speaking, in all the core skills in about 10 days. And then it's a case of exposing them to this specific environment and getting specific training going as well, specific experience of that environment. And that's a gentle process. It takes time. I mean, I didn't stick my head above the parapet for 17 years of expeditioning in the polar regions, and it was only after that period of time I thought, well, actually, I probably know something about it now and can tell others about it. So it does take time, and, you know, I've got all my fingers and toes, which is probably testament to doing it properly, I suppose. But if you do it properly as well, I mean, I never stop learning in the cold environment particularly. There's always something I learned. It might be tiny, it might be big, but I always come back with some other piece of knowledge, piece of experience that helps me for the next time. Because when you're in those sort of extreme environments, it's the trick is being as comfortable as you possibly can and keeping your body going and being you know, top form as much as you possibly can. And all these things, you know, when you bring them back to your own normal, makes living in your normal environment fantastic fun, because you're effective, you're efficient, you're a great performer, blah blah blah. You know, it translates to the corporate world or whatever world you live in. So it's what I call the walk tall syndrome. It's a sort of, people come back with an inner confidence, an inner self-assuredness that means that nothing that they find in their high street will really faze them. You know, if someone falls down with a heart attack, you know, they'll be able to deal with it and deal with it effectively. So it's a wonderfully developing, self-developing process.